Today's podcast is brought to you by the Herzog Foundation. Rachel Bruno was a loving mom of two young children when the unthinkable happened. Her seven-week-old son, Lucas, sustained a life-threatening head injury. Then Rachel was wrongfully accused of being the one who hurt him. Her terrifying journey and ultimate victory is coming up next. Stay with us. This is the Moms for America podcast. Each week, leaders and everyday champions tell personal stories, share advice, and tackle the issues most important to moms. Hi, moms. I'm Debbie Krulaitis, your host, and welcome to the Moms for America podcast. So glad that you mamas, there might be a few men out there too, are joining us this week. We gather together to inspire, encourage, and educate moms in their journey through motherhood. So again, welcome. I'm so glad to have all of you joining us today. Today's program, let me tell you about this. Rachel Bruno is a Nashville-based author and advocate for parents that have been falsely accused in the child welfare system. She has written the book Fractured Hope, A Mother's Fight for Justice, about her experience of nearly losing custody of her children after a false accusation of abuse. Now Rachel's mission is to expose the corruption of the foster care system and encourage families currently entangled within it. All right, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on the Moms for America podcast. What an incredible story, a very difficult story for you and your family. Thanks for sharing this because it's almost hard to believe that this happened to you. So welcome.
Thank you so much, Debbie.
Alrighty, let's talk a little bit about where you were in your life, your home, your kids, hubby, when this kind of all took place.
Well, I was a mom. I was also a business owner. My husband and I owned our own cybersecurity business at this point. I am an MBA graduate from Pepperdine University, and I had my first son. He was 20 months old, and I was now handling my newborn baby, my second newborn baby. And a little bit of my medical history, I do have epilepsy, I have seizures, and one of the main triggers for my episodes are sleep deprivation or interrupted sleep. And all you moms out there know that.
Right. All you got to hear is a newborn baby, right?
You ain't sleeping.
Right.
So my doctors told me, like, you need to get somebody to help you, at least with the night shift, so that you can get those 8 hours of sleep. So my firstborn, it was my mom and my mother-in-law. Wonderful. Second time around, they said, we're too old for this. Here's some money. Get yourself a nanny. And I'm like, you guys are the best moms in the world. Right. So I went off looking for a nanny. I found one. She, you know, claimed to be a postpartum doula. She was a graduate from San Diego State University. She was married. Okay. Her husband was in the Marines. She had two children herself, and she was looking to break into this industry, right, to break into this new role. So we interviewed her, background checks, referrals, all that stuff, no red flags. She started watching my son when he was 7 days old.
Okay, so 7 days old, so you can get your sleep.
Right.
So this is a night nanny, basically, we would call her.
She watched him from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m.
Okay. All right, and then no problems that you had. There's no concerns. You hired her and you liked her.
Right, and we were actually going to extend our contract with her before something happened.
Yes. So let's talk about this now. When the baby is, how old now is she watching the baby at this point?
He was 7 weeks old.
Okay.
And I just woke up to him screaming at about 4 o'clock in the morning.
How long was she with you if he was just 7 weeks old? How long at this point she had been with you?
So from 7 days to 7 weeks. So yeah,
okay,
approximately 6 weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so nothing like this had ever happened before. All of a sudden, the baby is in a terror scream.
Right. And I am home alone. My husband was on a business trip.
Okay.
My 20-month-old son was sleeping directly across the hallway. And I hear the screaming and I pause, right? See, he stopped screaming at one point. And I'm like, okay, maybe changing the diaper, feeding him, doing something like that. A few minutes go by, then he starts screaming again. I wake up again, like, okay. This goes on for about 10 minutes. Stop, go, stop, go, stop, go. So I just get out of bed. I walk down the hallway. She had the door like propped open. She was standing next to the crib, like over the crib. He was in the crib, swaddled inside the crib. And she was going like this on his chest, right? Wiggling him back and forth, shushing him, trying to get him to calm down. And I'm just standing in the doorway. She doesn't even acknowledge that I'm at the doorway. Then she proceeds to pick him up and like put him on her shoulder in a burp position. And when he's in this position, he stops screaming, but he's still like making weird faces. He looks really uncomfortable. And that's when I walk in, I open the door, I walk in, and I ask her, you know, did anything happen? Did something happen? And that's when she shows me an empty bottle and she said, I just fed him. He's really gassy. And I said, okay, you know, fair enough. Newborn babies get gassy. So I told her, you know, he's obviously not settling down. I'm already awake. Why don't you just go home and I'll take it from here?
Did you have some kind of, you had something was in your mama spirit, obviously.
Yes, but not, I mean, I never imagined any malicious activity was going on, right?
So
So
now
I
you
know.
can't calm him down either. So nanny leaves. Now you're just trying to take care of this very upset baby.
Yes, and when she tells me that he's gassy, you know, Dr. Google to the rescue, I automatically start Googling all the symptoms. I'm like, I undress him. I took everything off, look for rashes, look for drainage, look for ear infections, you know, anything that might be causing this baby to be so upset. And I couldn't find anything. There were no external signs, no physical signs of anything. I unswaddled him, I undressed him, and I gave him skin to skin. And when I gave him the skin to skin, he did calm down. And I'm like, okay, you just wanted your mommy. So he's on my chest. I'm in my bed. He's on my chest. I fall asleep, and he falls asleep because the next time I wake up, it's another scream, another jolt. And I look at my clock, and it's about 3 hours later. I'm like, okay, last feeding, 4 a.m. Now it's 7 a.m. You're hungry. So I go try to feed him, and he would not take it. Like I'd never had any issues with him feeding before. He kept flinging his head back. But like, I'm like, what is wrong with you? And while this is going on, my 20-month-old son is waking up and he's screaming from his crib, right, for mommy to come get him. And I'm looking at the baby. I'm like, okay, I put him down on the crib. As soon as I lay him down flat, he just starts screaming, like screaming. And I go back, I hold him. If I'm holding him like this, he was fine. I'm like, okay, do you just want to be held? Right, so I'm holding him, and then I'm picking up my other
You're
one.
just tr right. You're trying to figure this out.
Right,
And
so
you,
I'm
again,
picking him up.
you don't see any blood, any
Nothing.
bruises. You don't see anything that would give you any kind of concern, except you just know that this baby is in terrible pain. Something's going on.
And I'm home alone, right? And baby's not stop crying, like my 20-month-old bouncing off the walls. You know, I'm just trying to manage all this, and I call my mom,
I
who was
got,
with
yeah.
her husband, who was having cataract surgery. And
Okay.
she's like, I
So
can't leave
you're
him
like,
alone. Yeah, she's like,
all
I can't leave
right.
him. He can't drive. I'm like, please,
So
could
are you
somebody
thinking now
else?
you got to go to the ER?
Yeah. So I call a pediatrician first and I say, you know, I need to see him. And it's like, he doesn't have any availability until 4 p.m. And I'm like, I have a screaming baby since 4 a.m. I need to see somebody. And that's where they tell me, okay, then take him to the emergency room. So everybody hops in the car, 20-month-old son, my mom, the baby, and myself. And we head to the nearest hospital that I knew, which was the Children's Hospital of Orange County. Even though I lived in LA County, it was about a 30-minute drive.
And
And
baby's still crying?
of course not. As soon as we get in the car, he stops crying. He falls asleep. And I'm like, great, right? Overreactive mom going to the emergency room. That's what I was thinking. As soon as
I
I
know
get,
we've all been there. We have all been
right.
there.
And then as soon as I get there, I tell them the symptoms. She did, you know, the receptionist did tell me to go to the waiting room right away. A nurse comes in right away, checks all his vital signs. Everything was normal. And then takes me to the bed, the actual hospital bed in a room. And a doctor comes, the ER doctor comes, asks me again, what are his symptoms? I tell him, and he walks away. And I'm thinking, you know, he's going to tell me to give the kid Benadryl and go home. But he stops at the doorway, about 10 feet away from the bed, and he is just staring at my son on that bed. like laser focused on my son.
Now, at this point, have they done scans? Have they done any testing on him? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
So he's just staring at my son, and we have all the other nurses. You know, people are in there. It's just silent, dead silent, as everybody is waiting for what the doctor is going to do next. And he starts walking towards the bed, and he goes straight to my son's head, right behind his left ear. And he says, "Did you feel this?" I said, "No." So he grabs my two fingers, he puts it there. He's like, "Do you feel the bulge?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he said, "That's fluid that's leaking from your son's brain." I'm like, "What does that mean?" And I'm like, it could be spinal cerebral fluid, it can be blood. We need to go do a CT scan right away."
Oh my
And
gosh,
as soon as
right.
he says that, 10 people rush into that room. They raise up the rails to the bed and they bolt down that hallway to the CT room. And as we're going down the hallway, his right arm starts twitching. And the nurses start running like even faster. I look up at the nurse, I'm like, "Is this normal?" She's like, "No." And then me, that's like my first light bulb moment. I'm like, "Oh my God, left side of the brain, right arm twitching. He's having a seizure." I'm like, "I gave it to him, right? It's genetic, it's hereditary." I say a little prayer right there. I'm like, "Lord, please spare my son from having to live with this like I did." They take him to the room, tell me to go wait outside. And
So
when
now
they're
you're thinking he has epilepsy, because
right.
that's what you have, right? For anyone that's tuning in right now, you have a medical condition of epilepsy. That's why you've hired this nanny to be the night nanny, and now all of a sudden you have a crisis with this baby and you're in the ER. So I would think the exact same thing. So you're not in a full-out panic. You're kind of like, they're going to figure this out.
Exactly. And then the doctors come back, "Miss Moreno, we have the results." He takes me into the back room where all the monitors are, and he tells me, "This is very serious." I'm like, "Okay. Your son has a cranial fracture, and the fluid that is leaking is blood. The brain hates blood. We need to go do emergency surgery right now so that we can drain the blood and fix the fracture." And I'm so in shock. I'm like, I went from gassy baby to now my son is going into emergency brain surgery.
Right.
And he's giving me all the liabilities. "Are you against blood transfusions?" I'm like, "I don't care what you have to do to save my baby, save my baby."
Right.
And off they go, wheeling off my 7-week-old baby into emergency brain surgery.
Wow. So now you're trying to figure out what just happened. Was the baby dropped? So immediately you're praying for the life of your child. Your husband's not there, and you're trying to figure out what happened. Because you put a baby to bed and then you woke up, later with the screaming baby. So how does this play out now, and how bad was this fracture
Yeah, it
to the
was
brain?
pretty bad. It was a bad fracture. You know, when the surgery was done, it took about 4 hours for the surgery to be completed. Neurosurgeon comes, gets me, and first question I ask him, "Is he going to be okay? Is he going to be brain damaged?" And the neurosurgeon tells me, "Honestly, we don't know whether he's going to survive the next 48 hours." He started having about 15 seizures an hour following the surgery. He received three bags of blood transfusion. He was highly anemic. So right now we have him in a medically induced coma until we can figure out the right cocktail to control the seizures. But he's stable. I will take you upstairs to his room. So again, I'm just in shock. Like this whole time, I'm just receiving,
I
all this
can't imagine.
information.
No.
And So I go up to the room, and again, I see my baby. He had gauze wrapped around his head. He had tubes coming out of every orifice you can imagine. And I just touched that little hand. Usually they grab your finger. There was no response. And again, another prayer. I said, "God, I don't care. If I have to dedicate the rest of my life to taking care of my son, I will. Just don't take him away from me."
Yes.
And
I read here too that this injury that he sustained was equal to being shot in the head. Is that correct?
well, that's what the police officer said.
Wow. Oh, the police officer, we haven't gotten to that yet. That's not what the doctor said. Okay. So now, okay, so baby's recovering, I guess.
Yeah, he's
Now
in a
what
medically
happens?
induced coma. He's
Okay.
stable, right? And I mean, after I say that prayer, I have the peace, right? I'm like, there's no better place for him to be than in your hands, God. He's yours.
Right.
So I go into logistics mode, right? I'm obviously not leaving the hospital that day. My 20-month-old son is still with me at this point. My mom
Sure.
is still with me at this point. I'm texting my husband, who's on an airplane, receiving these text messages that his son is in brain surgery. I call my friend. I ask her to pick up my mom. I say, good night to my son, my 20-month-old son, gonna go sleep at grandma's house today. Happy as a bird that he's gonna go sleep at grandma's house. My friend picks them up, takes them home. And while I'm waiting for my husband to come from the airport straight to the hospital, I hear a knock on the door. And I look up, and it's a man in a uniform and a lady with a clipboard. And the officer opens the window and he's like, "Miss Bruno, can we speak to you?" I said, "Yeah." In my mind, I'm like, "What is this? What is a police officer doing in my hospital room?" And that's when he tells me what happened to your son was worse than getting struck in the head by a bullet. I'm like, "Okay, what does that
So
mean?"
they were called.
They were called, but I didn't know that.
Right.
No, I had no idea. And when he said struck by a bullet, and the first thing in my mind, I'm like, are you accusing this woman of having tried to kill my son? Because
Right.
what else would a bullet to the head do?
Right.
So that's the mindset I had at that point. And he said, "Will you help us? We want to help you figure out how this happened to your son." So I'm like, "Of course, you're asking me for help. We're on the same team." Obviously, it was the nanny in my mind.
Right.
And he's questioning me and he starts, "Why didn't you call 911?" Because I didn't know what was wrong with him. She told
So
me.
this is a police officer with a social worker. I'm just trying to make sure I understand. Police officer with a social worker. Now they're interrogating you. Okay. Well, and of course everybody should ask questions if somebody's injured, but you now in your mind are putting it together that the nanny had some kind of accident with your baby, never told you. And now, do you try to communicate this to them? Because they're looking at you as the
Well,
suspect.
I guess I was very naive to think that when he
Right.
said, "We're here to help you," that he was actually going to help me.
Right. Do they interview the nanny then? Do you explain everything to her,
I
to them,
do.
and then what
I
happens?
tell them the whole saga, and then he starts,
Okay.
"Why didn't you call 911?" Because I
Okay.
didn't know what was wrong with him. She told me he was gassy. Why did you
Right.
wait so long to bring him to the hospital? Like, again, I didn't know. He was crying, right? There were no physical signs of anything. I didn't know. Why did you bring him to a hospital in Orange County when you live in LA County? Like, because this is the nearest children's hospital that I know.
Yeah.
It's just jotting
And these were
everything
your
down.
decisions. Obviously, you were trying to get the baby. And so is he trying to break down like a case against you? Did you feel like you were being interrogated?
I did,
Clearly.
but I was still.
Okay.
Thinking that I should cooperate with them because they're here to help me.
Sure.
And
And
then
what
that's
were
when the social worker steps in. They're kind of playing good
Okay.
cop, bad cop,
Okay.
right? In the scenario, she's like, "I'm so sorry this happened to your son. I know it must be very stressful for you. Do you have any other children?" Like, "I do. What other ages? Where are they?" Tell her my son, 20 months old, he's at my mom's house. And she says, "Is it okay if we go see him?" And by this time, it's around 9 o'clock at night. And I say, "He's probably asleep by now." And she says, "We're not going to wake him. We just want to make sure he's okay." Now, again, me thinking I have nothing to hide. These people are here to help me. I say, "Yes, go ahead." I call my mom. I tell her, social services wants, or social worker wants to see David, make sure he's okay. And she leaves at that point, 9 o'clock at night, she leaves. And the police officer stays with me. And he starts
I
asking me
would
about
be
my
like
husband.
too. I'd be like, can you go find the nanny and find out what happened? Because
No, he's
obviously, if
well.
she was not going to tell you, they're just going to concentrate on you. The
Right.
nanny is the key here.
Right. So he tells me the detectives are on their way. Will you wait for the detectives? I'm like, "Okay, yes." The detectives didn't show up until midnight. And they interviewed me until 2 o'clock in the morning. And they kept asking me the same type of questions, right? Where were you? What happened? What do you think happened? And again, I still have it in my mind, bullet to the head. I'm like, are they trying to get me to say that this woman tried to do something to my son? Right. And I'm like, I can't. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what she did. I don't know. I don't know what happened. And they're like, what
Right.
do you
The
think
nanny is the
happened?
only one that would know.
Right. Like, she was with him. She was the last one to be with him. I don't know. I just woke up to him crying.
Right.
And they're like, what do you think happened? I'm like, I don't know. She could have dropped him. I don't know.
Okay, so what do they do now? Do they go
So
see
for
the
2 hours,
nanny
they
or?
just kept going through this, and I find I'm the one who cut off the interview. I'm like, I have to go to sleep.
Right.
Right? I've been up since 4 o'clock in the morning. I have seizures. I have epilepsy. I do not want to have one right now. I'm more than
Right.
happy to cooperate with you. You know, I and they were fine. They're like, they gave me their business cards. They're like, call us when you wake up and we'll continue.
Okay.
Now, at this point, something had already happened. My husband had already arrived to the hospital and he didn't tell me because he knew my condition. He knew the stress I was under. He told me, gave me my meds, and he's like, go to sleep. But at that 2 o'clock in the morning, when I, said goodbye to the detectives, social services, the social worker that had interviewed me at the hospital was already at my mom's house at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's when they showed up at 2 o'clock in the morning after she left at 9, right? I thought she was going to go see my mom at 9. They showed up at 2 o'clock in the morning with three police officers at my mom's house, and they told my mom we're taking him.
You're taking your other son
My
away from the
20-month-old son.
family.
Yes. And
And
my
this is
mom
how
is
they
like,
treated you.
no,
Yeah,
you're
no.
not.
Yeah, no one had any, they did not do a full investigation on this for sure.
Nothing.
And if he was at your mother's house, what would be, you know, obviously you're in the hospital.
Right.
So now they take your 20-month son into
Yes.
custody. Like, what do they, is that custody or just a
Yeah,
foster
they
care?
call it protective custody.
Okay.
And, at that point, we didn't know what the heck was going on. They tell my mom, if you don't give him to us, you're going to be arrested. And there's three
Yeah.
police officers standing right there, and they don't say anything to my mom.
Right. How would you know?
Right? How would you know? And my mom's like, okay, if I go to jail, do I take him with me? And they're like, no, he's going to go to foster care. And you
Oh
are
my
not going to be able to
gosh.
care for him because you're going to have a criminal record. So my mom at that point, she's like, I don't know what to do, right? What am I supposed to
Does
do?
she call you?
She's with my husband on the phone with my husband while I'm sleeping.
Okay.
And my husband is with the police officer. My husband is with the social worker. You do not have permission to take my son. You cannot take my son. You cannot take my son. And social services, sorry, this is exigent circumstances. We are calling for backup. Blah, blah. I mean, they're creating, just chaos. And my mom says that she's holding my son and he notices all the chaos going on, right? And all the
He's
stress.
got to be terrified.
And she says that in her mind at that point, she thought it would be less traumatic for him if she would just give him to the social worker as opposed to them ripping him away, which is what they were going to do.
Sure. Oh,
So
brutal.
she gives my son to the social worker and he's crying, kicking and screaming. She has to strap him into the car seat because he wouldn't let the social worker do it. And they drive off in the middle of the night, not telling us where,
Anything.
what the heck is going on.
So now you, the baby goes to foster care, your other son,
Right.
your mom and husband are like trying to pick up the pieces. You're sleeping, they get you up, and where does this go now?
So I wake up and my husband is just staring at me, right? This blank
Right.
stare on his face. And my first instinct is to look at the baby. I'm like, he's there. He's alive. Like,
Right.
what happened? And he says, they took David.
Ugh.
And I'm like, what do you mean they took David? Who? Where? Like, she lied to me. And he's like, yeah. And I've been on the phone all morning. They won't answer their phone. I've called the
How do you,
supervisor.
yeah,
I don't know
what
where
do
he
you
is.
do?
Yeah, he's like, I don't know where he is.
How long did it take before you found out where he was?
Until I called a lawyer. I had to call about 10 different lawyers until I
Okay.
found one that would see me that day. Right? I'm calling all these family law attorneys, and they're like, nope, we don't deal with CPS. Try this person. Nope, we don't deal with CPS. Try
Thank
this.
God you found a lawyer.
I did, and I went to his office. And he's the one who knew where my son was before I even said a word. He knew where my son was. And they took him to the county children's shelter. That's where he was.
When we return, Rachel will continue her story and her victory. Stay with us. Hi, moms. I'm excited to share some news about our new sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. We know you're passionate about raising patriots and empowering your children with the best education possible. And the Herzog Foundation shares that passion. They're dedicated to promoting liberty through education freedom and helping parents like you choose the best educational path. They offer a powerhouse of resources designed to support families and schools alike. Whether you're ready to dive in headfirst to the world of education or simply looking for more ways to empower your child's learning. From free training events to their must-read online publication, The Lion, they're committed to keeping you informed about what's happening in education. Also, if you've ever thought, moms, about starting your own Christian school or co-op, their Schoolbox online course will give you everything you need to get started on the right foot. Again, we are so proud to partner with the Herzog Foundation, and we encourage you to explore all their amazing tools and the insights that they offer. So go ahead, visit herzogfoundation.com to learn more. You won't want to miss these incredible resources. Again, find it all out at herzogfoundation.com.
You know, I've never really felt comfortable sharing pictures of my kids on social media. Then I found Tubu, a premium social app with an actual authentic community. No bots, no one trolling me or my family. Just clean, wholesome content you can trust.
Welcome back, moms. Before we continue with our interview with Fractured Hope author Rachel Bruno, I'd like to invite you to like, subscribe, and share our podcast. Maybe you know someone that has a similar story or a friend of a friend. So please share this podcast with your mom friends. Also, if you have any ideas or topics for our podcast, I think someone actually had submitted, Rachel, please email me at podcast@momsforamerica.net. I would love to hear from you, get some feedback, and suggested guests. Lastly, I want to invite everybody here. If you're not a part of our mom group, you better get with us. Moms for America truly is the ultimate support group. We are moms uniting all across America. We are fighting for faith, family, freedom, and the Constitution. And I would love to have you in our tribe. You go to momsforamerica.us. You sign up for our newsletter. You check out all of our resources, our webinars, our seminars, our programs, our events. We are here to help you, mom, on your journey through motherhood. We've got all the resources you need. So please check us out at momsforamerica.us. So where do you go after this now?
So
you've got a baby that's hanging on for dear life.
Yeah.
You've got one in foster care.
Yeah.
So that baby goes into foster care, your son, and there's nothing you can do about this right now because you've got to take care of. How do you balance this?
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing I could do, period. You know, my attorney,
right.
I go in there and I'm like, where is my son and where do I go get him? And he says,
so you can't get them. Yeah.
You have no idea what you're in for. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They can't just come in here and take my kid. And he says, yes, they can. And I'm like, based on what? What happened to innocent until proven guilty? What happened to our Constitution? What about the nanny?
And what about the nanny?
This is family court. They don't follow constitutional law.
I've heard family court is tough.
And I'm like, what other law is there?
Right.
He says they can do whatever they deem is in the best interest of the child.
Wow.
And
now you're faced with what?
A
trial?
You're not getting your kids back. He said, what happened to your son is criminal. You are facing 15 years in jail and $100,000 bail if they decide to charge you. If I go into that courtroom,
yeah,
and I ask the judge to give the kids back to you, they're going to pull this up. And he shows me the criminal investigation. And they're going to say, Your Honor, this woman is under criminal investigation. You are placing the children at risk by giving them back to her.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, they're going to go to foster care. They're under 2 years old, nonverbal. They can be legally adopted by the foster family if the case lasts longer than 6 months. And they will make it last longer than 6 months. And I am just floored. I'm like, what country is this? Like,
what do you do? What did you do?
So I'm like, what are you telling me? Like, what choice do I have? And he's like, your saving grace was that your husband was out of state when this happened. So legally speaking, he wasn't at the crime scene.
Okay.
We're going to ask the judge to give sole custody to your husband. That
oh,
way your
God.
Children don't even risk going into foster care. Because again, if they go into foster care, they're going to be adopted.
Right. Were they able to get them to your husband?
So they did. And he told me, he warned me ahead of time, but if the judge grants this, they're going to kick you out of the house.
Right. You've got to leave your home because
right.
You're the criminal in their eyes.
Right. So
okay.
I'm like, okay, what choice do I have? Right. Of course, give them to their father. I don't care
yes.
what you do to me. Leave
right.
my kids alone.
Right.
Right. So 72 hours later is when we have the emergency hearing. And that's our plan, right, to ask this. But, we're a family of faith and we are praying. I mean, everybody across the world is praying for us. And I'm like, this is not going to happen. This is
Yes.
not going to happen. Like a judge is going to see, right? This is not going to happen. And we walk into that courtroom and I'm thinking, it's going to be at least like Judge Judy. You talk, you talk, you talk. And I get in that courtroom. The nanny is not there. The detectives aren't there. The police officers aren't there. The social worker isn't there. The only person on trial is me. I'm in a room here, sitting on this side. My husband is by himself with his attorney sitting on the other side. And there's about seven different lawyers. They read out the lawyers that were appointed to my children. Like, I don't even know these people. And these people are representing my children.
Oh, gosh.
And then the lawyer for social services, the lawyer for LA County, the lawyer for Orange County, I mean, everybody in there. And I'm waiting, right, for the judge to ask me what happened. Like, when am
Right.
I going to get
What's
to say
the
something?
story? Tell us,
Right.
Mom.
And next thing I hear, my name is Bruno. Any objections? And I look at my lawyer. I'm like, what? And he said, any objections to the children being placed with their father? I said, no. Mr. Bruno, any objections? No. Children will be placed with their father. Ms. Bruno, you have 24 hours to vacate your home. You are court ordered to take child abuse classes, parenting classes, individual counseling, and a caseworker will be calling you regarding visitation. Court is adjourned. So within 15 minutes, they took everything away from me. Right? They kicked me out of my house. They essentially took away my husband. I couldn't be in contact with my husband because he was now the primary
Only
caretaker for
saving
my
grace
children.
is that it was your husband. That was
I
huge
know.
instead
Thank
of,
God. Thank God it wasn't him.
right.
But I mean, we left that courtroom. Everybody's crying in the hallway. And my attorney,
How's baby boy at this time?
he was still in a coma at this time.
So baby boy's
And
still in the coma. Oh,
still in a coma. My
gosh.
20-month-old had been in the county children's shelter for 48 hours. They wouldn't release him to me or to my husband until we had the court hearing. They released him to my mom because my mom was a public school teacher, mandated reporter, fingerprinted. So she got him 48 hours later. And I did see him for a brief little period of time in that courthouse. And when he saw me, he ran away. Like he ran the other direction when he saw me. And,
Broke your
he
heart.
saw me before. At the children's shelter, before the hearing, they let us see him for 30 minutes at the children's shelter for a supervised visit. And my son was like a zombie, right? He was looking at us, he wouldn't come near us. The social worker said, he didn't sleep well last night. And I'm like, duh. And like, he's not eating. And I'm like, what did you feed him? She's like, hot dogs and peas. And I'm
So
like,
he was so terrified, he was even just afraid to come by you guys. He
yeah,
didn't know what was
in
going
his
on.
mind, I abandoned him, right? And he was in this place for 48
Ugh.
hours with no contact from anybody. And then they
So,
do let me see him. And after the 30 minutes were up, my son is sitting on my lap playing with me. He was finally letting his guard down with me. And the social worker comes and tells me, your time is up. And I have to get up. I have to tell my son, I can't talk about the case. They tell you can't talk about anything with your
Now,
child.
this is right. This is all before
It's all
your husband
before.
has custody. Yeah. So let me hear about what's happening now with the court custody. So how do you get past this? How do you find out, you then have to go to these classes, these
Right.
and you're kind of starting putting together that there's problems with family court. You're starting to put together that, similar situations maybe have happened to other parents.
Right. Yeah. Well, in that child abuse class that I was court ordered to take, I'm thinking I'm going to be in there with a bunch of drug addicts, alcoholics, domestic vice, tattooed, pierced up, crazy people. And when I get in that class, everybody's in the same boat that I was. It was a very dystopian support group. There was about 30 of us in there. And every story, there were bathtub accidents, there were playground accidents. There were disgruntled exes making anonymous calls. There were some domestic violence issues, but that didn't warrant the removal of the children, right? Like what they do with these children is just heartbreaking. They separated the siblings. Family members were offered money to adopt the children. Then they would turn the tables and they would backstab each other. I mean, it was horrible. And in my mind, I'm like, why? Like, why are they taking these children from perfectly normal, loving families? And then I remembered when they released my son to my mom, right, from the county children's shelter. Before I had the hearing, they asked my mom if she would adopt my children. And my mom's like, no, hey, give them back to their mom to whom they belong. And the social worker said, well, we don't know what the judge is going to order. If the judge orders the removal of the children, will you adopt them? And my mom says, what happens if I don't? They're going to go to foster care. So my mom signs the adoption papers before we ever had a hearing. And the social worker hands her two checks for $680 each. And she tells my mom, you'll be receiving $680 a month per child. They qualify for WIC, they qualify for food stamps, they qualify for Medicaid. And my mom's like, I don't want your money. And the social worker tells her, well, this is how we help the families. So in that child abuse class, I'm seeing all the money that's being thrown, right? And all these services that we're required to take. And that's when, Dr. Google to the rescue, I start researching it. And there's an actual law, a federal law called the Adoptions and Safe Families Act that was signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1997. And it gives the states federal funding for every child that they remove from their home and place in foster care. The state
So,
gets anywhere between $2,000 to $8,000 a month per child per month.
you're saying this is an incentive.
Absolutely. It's an entitlement program, and it's a use it or lose it scheme. It's a dollar per dollar match. It's never subject to sequester. And that's how they keep their bureaucracy. That's how they keep their agency going, is by having all these children. And they only get the money if they remove the child. They do not get the money by providing services.
So now you're kind of putting some things together.
Right.
You're out of shock mode and you're into defender mode.
Right.
Putting your family back together.
Yep.
Kind of fast forward to the end of this. Now you've got to go through these classes, your baby's in the coma. Baby starts doing better in the hospital.
He does. He was about 14 days in the NICU, or not the NICU, the PICU. And
Okay.
was ready. He was able to go home with my husband, with my 20-month-old son. I had to have my cousins from Brazil come stay with my husband to help out with the children. Because, like I said, we owned our own business. We actually ended up losing our business because my husband couldn't travel, right? We had court hearings like every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks.
Oh,
And my life
really?
was taken over by these services. They call them services, where I took child abuse class one day, I took parenting the other day, I took individual counseling the other day. And I was always at the hospital with doctor's appointments. Our lives was taken over by this. So we lost our business. We were over $250,000 in debt when this was all said and done. But they kicked me
So,
out of the house for 40 days and
okay.
40 nights. On the 40th day, we had a hearing. And my attorney told me, don't bother coming to court. The status of your investigation hasn't changed. The criminal case is still open. Meanwhile, I have two cases, right? I have the family court case and I have a criminal
In a
case.
criminal, okay.
Yep. So he's like, nothing has changed. So don't waste your time. I won't waste mine. And I'm
So
like,
he's saying, don't go.
yeah. And I'm like, he's been right about everything so far all along. So I call my husband and he's like, he told us not to go today. And my husband says, I don't care what he says, we're going.
Okay, so
Like,
you guys
fine.
go.
Yep. So we go.
He doesn't know that you're praying and fasting.
That right.
So
So
you go to court, and what happens?
we go to court and he shows up. 2 hours later, he shows up and I go hug him and he's like, don't hug me. I can't make you any promises. I'm like, okay. So he goes into that courtroom, comes back, initial this, sign this, initial this. I have no idea what I'm signing, what I'm initialing. I'm just trusting God and my attorney at this point. And about 4 hours of this back and forth, he comes out with a stack of 700 pages. And he says, here's the deal. If you're willing to sign this document the way it's written, all that stuff I had you initial and cross out are things that I know are not true, or that I know are inconclusive, or they change the narrative. So they've agreed to the corrections that I've made. There's nothing in here admitting guilt. There's nothing in here saying that you did this. It's just the social worker's narrative, the police reports, the services you've taken. and their medical records. If you're willing to sign this, they will let you go home today. So at this point, 40 days in the life of a 7-week-old baby, I felt like I'd missed out on so much, right? And my
Especially since the
20-month-old
baby's
son,
sick,
well, yeah.
because they're making medical decisions and taking care of him, and you're not there to be a part of it.
Right. So if they
Right.
told me to chop off my leg, I would have done
Sure.
it.
So you signed it, and what
I
happened
signed
then? You
it.
were
I went
able.
home and I was able to stay home with my kids from that point on. I was still required to finish the services, which is the child abuse
Okay.
classes, the parenting classes. The case went on for 6 months.
Okay.
After 6 months, it was the social worker's recommendation that the case be closed. So case was closed, but I had that fire up my butt, knowing what I knew, everything that I
Can
would.
I just ask before, because I there is a an interesting end to this.
Yeah.
What was the deal with the nanny? Did anyone talk to the nanny? Did anybody find out anything from the nanny? Did she go dark? Why weren't they investigating her?
Well, I did get a private investigator. My attorney told me to get a private investigator. And I
Okay.
did. And he found out that she was married to a police officer and that his brother was also a police officer in two neighboring counties to where this all occurred. And my private investigator is retired FBI, and he told me, said, this is code blue. They're not going to go after her.
Jesus.
And they didn't, I mean, they did, social services did go talk to her after they had already seized my children. They went to her house to go talk to her. And it is in the court reports that her child had a black eye when social services went to go talk to her. And they believed her. She said that the child fell off the bed, and that's why she had a black eye. She also
Oh,
did agree.
her child, but
Her
she said
child.
nothing happened to your baby, just gas.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah. But her
And
child
they.
had a black eye when social services went to go interview her.
Okay.
And she did take a
So.
polygraph, which she came back inconclusive. She refused to take it again. I took the polygraph. I passed with flying colors, and it was never shown in court. So, they just didn't go after her. They just didn't go after
No.
her. Make of it what you will, right? Whether it was
Right.
her contacts or not. I don't know. I don't know
But
what
you had your day in court.
I did have my day in court. So after our case
Yeah,
was
tell us
closed,
about this.
after everything was closed, I started looking up civil rights attorneys. And his name is Sean McMillan. He's based in California. And this is all he does is sue CPS. I mean, his first case was with Miss California, and he won like over $10 million. So I called him, and my husband was so paranoid at this point, right? My husband was traumatized. Of course, everybody was traumatized. He's like, no, like, I don't want these people ever to show up in my life. I don't want to talk to any. I don't want to do any of this. So I would go to the dumpster outside our house. And I would call Sean McMillan and I would be, this is what happened. Do we have a case? And he
Do
said,
not mess with Mama Bear.
that's right. And he said, you do. It's a Fourth Amendment and 14th Amendment violation. This is what we're going to do, blah, blah. So he laid it all out for me, all the
Was he
finances.
hopeful that you could win in
Oh,
court?
absolutely. He's like, I'll take it. He's like, I don't take cases. I
Okay.
don't think I can win. I will take it.
Okay.
So once I had everything laid out on paper, then I go to my husband and I'm like, here it is. I found the best attorney there is. He will
Yep.
take our case. We do have a case. We are doing this.
Good.
And he said, all right, we're doing this.
Well, tell us what happened.
So, Discovery starts, the interrogations, the admissions. I mean, it's a hard process, right? To have to relive
Yeah.
everything. And still in my mind, I always had a little inkling of hope that I just got a few bad apples, right? In this case, I'm like, somebody messed up somewhere. And that's what we're going to find out, right? There must have been something, miscommunication here. And I will never forget when I read, because these reports are all redacted, they're all sealed. You have no access to them until the child turns 18. The only reason we have access to them is because we sued them.
Okay.
So they all came unsealed, like 3,000 pages of documents that I had to go through.
Wow.
And that's where I found out that when they seized my child, my 20-month-old son, they did not have a warrant. They did not have a court order. They had absolutely nothing, no right to take my child that night.
So they were
So
not
they
in.
got a court order that was dated 2008. This case
Oh
happened in
no.
2015.
Oh, so you're uncovering all
Yes.
mishaps,
Yes.
and this made your case even better.
Right. And I'm like, are these people stupid or are they liars? And my attorney is like, well, that's up for the jury to decide.
And are you going after each division, we'll call them?
We did. We went after the hospital. We went after LA County. We went after Orange County. We went after the Sheriff's Department. We went after the social services and all the individuals
Wow.
associated with each entity.
Wow. And what happened? Tell us.
So through discovery, you know, again, I see all this stuff, these weird dates.
Yeah.
And they gave my son 13 vaccines without my consent when they took him to that county children's shelter.
No.
Yes. They gave him a full skeletal survey without our consent. They gave him an anal wink test, which is for sexual abuse when there weren't even any allegations of sexual abuse. Then we get their text messages. And these are text messages between the police officer, the social worker, and the supervisor the night that they interviewed me. Now, before they even interviewed me, the social worker that came to the hospital texted her supervisor saying, I'm on my way to the hospital, have an infant with a cranial fracture, 20-month-old sibling was with the nanny, her mom. And then the supervisor replies back, OMG, do you think it was the nanny? And puts a little sad face emoji. And then the social worker replies back to her supervisor, no, think mom. So before they ever interviewed me, before they ever got to the hospital, based on what the doctor told the social worker, right? Because they're the mandated
You
reporter,
you're already guilty.
I was guilty. They had already made up their minds that it was me. So we have those
Well,
text
justice
messages.
prevailed.
Justice prevailed after 28 hours worth of depositions. And they are just digging themselves into a hole, right? And we're showing them
Okay.
all the discovery, all the stuff, all the proof. They decided to settle with us in December of 2018 for $1.49 million.
Glory be.
Glory to God. I mean, I know I wanted to go to trial so bad. I really did. I'm like, I don't care if I win $1 at this trial. I want these
Right.
people
You
held
want them to be
accountable.
convicted. Yes.
Right.
You want there to be justice. And this
Right.
doesn't, you would have never picked this over what happened to your kids,
Absolutely.
obviously. But once you have been wrongly accused and made a criminal, you do want people, because you know what? You don't want this to happen to somebody else, which then takes you to what you're doing right now with Parents' Right Advocacy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So once I won this lawsuit, you know, and that's the thing, my attorney's like, you know, we can go to trial. But honestly, even if you win, they're going to appeal this. And we're back to square one, and you're going to be spending another $500,000 on another trial. So my advice to you is that you take this money and run. You close this chapter, start your new chapter, because I'd already talked to him about what I want to do. And he's like, you
Right.
know, go.
Tell
So
us
I
about the
can
new
decide.
chapter now.
Yep. So a new chapter now. I wrote the book, which is how I started, you know, just creating awareness
Yep. Tell
about
us the
this
name of the
story.
book again.
My book is called Fractured Hope, A Mother's Fight for Justice. And it's on Amazon if you would like to purchase. And
Yes.
I started doing the podcast. I started talking through social media, right? Social media, people talk about social media, but I found so many people on social media, so many contacts of people who
And
were
you
going
found
through this.
people that were in the same different story, same
Yep.
situation, wrongly
Yep.
accused.
Wrongly
And then,
accused.
yeah, and you have now, is it a group or is it, I know you're Parents' Right Advocate, but
Right. I have
there's
my
a
own
certain,
nonprofit,
okay.
which is called the Giver of Light. And we just basically provide, you know, resources before, during, and after. We can't give legal advice, right? I'm not a lawyer, but I have the lived experience and I can sort of hold a parent's hand through the administrative process
How
because the
helpful.
system
Oh,
is
'cause you would have
overwhelmed.
loved something like this, right?
Absolutely.
And there
Yes.
was nowhere for you to turn, 'cause I know you
Right.
were Dr. Googling it everywhere
Yeah.
trying to find just some kind of help.
Right. So we do that through my nonprofit, but then there's like a grassroots movement of us. You know, we each do our own thing. We're kind of experts in our own field. You know, what I do is called the medical kidnapping, which is what happens at the hospital. And then there are other peoples that, help domestic violence victims, that help people with substance abuse issues. There are different niches
Oh, I
to this whole
see.
movement,
Yes. Yes.
right? So there's a few of us, each of us in our own niche, we've decided to go to Washington, D.C. We go to D.C. about 4 times a year while Congress
Okay.
is in session. And we have spoken to so many legislators. We tell them our personal stories. We educate them. Like, it's amazing how they don't know about the funding.
So, Family Advocates Act, is that something that is that a legislation? Tell us about that.
It is. It's legislation right now, sponsored by Barry Moore of Alabama. And all it says is that any state that receives Title IV-B funding, which is every
Okay.
state, must permit a family have a family advocate with them during any family court proceeding, be it legal or administrative. So, very simple, right? The reason we need a federal bill for this is because of the law, ASPA, right? The Adoptions and Safe Families Act. They created a confidentiality clause,
Oh,
which
I see.
makes sense because we're dealing with minors, right? They don't want to be FOIA'd. They don't want these minors' information all over the place, but it's been weaponized against the parents to the point that they will gag the parents, under the guise of protecting the minor. So the parent can't talk about the case. The parent can't bring support into the courtroom for them because
Oh, I
it's all
see.
sealed.
Wow.
So they're like, we're saying, let us in. We can help these parents. And with their permission, of course. We're not saying it's mandated. We're not asking for money. We're not telling the courts to
You
provide
want the
it.
option.
We want the option. We already do it for free anyway. It's what we're doing. So if this bill gets passed federally, then every state in family court will be allowed to have a family advocate with them. And it's
Beautiful.
already been reintroduced to the House this Congress, because now we have a new Congress since the new
Sure.
administration. And we are looking for co-sponsors, right, to get on board.
Very
So your
interesting.
audience, if they're listening,
Yeah.
your congressman, your
Well,
representative.
right. I think this happens more often than not. It's just people don't talk about these stories because they're devastating to a family. So, yes, Rachel, if somebody is listening and they know of someone that has had a hardship like this, a horrible situation, they may want to get co-sponsors on this. They may want to contact you. They may want to get in this fight. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can email me, Rachel, at thegiveroflight.org. I'm also on social media. My handles are at Rachel Bruno Speaks. And that's probably the easiest way to reach out to me is through social media. Now I'm always on there and doing the podcast and putting out content about so many cases, right? People don't realize how many cases there are.
I can just imagine once you get into this, it's kind of like all of a sudden when, you buy something and all of a sudden everybody else has it too.
Right.
You just never noticed it until it happened to you or it was a part of your life. And I am sure that there are a lot of parents that have been wrongly accused, that have dealt with the foster system, that have dealt with, being charged as a criminal, in a case where there is innocence or, all kinds of situations are happening with parents with kids. And number one is our kids, our priority. We want to protect and guide them. But the parents need to be handled properly in their home and in their family. So thank you for sharing this story. And like I said, there's people that are listening. There's moms that are listening that know someone that has had a situation like this. And I know our moms will reach out, maybe get you some co-sponsors. And thanks for sharing the story. And you know what it is too, Rachel? You standing up, you fighting for your kids, you taking it to the court, you putting them in their place, that inspires all of us.
Amazing. I would never have chosen this, but it's not my
I'm
calling,
sure.
right? I
How's
know what God wants me to do, and that's what gives me the strength to keep going.
That's what we do. How's the kids? Give us an update. Your little guy, how is he?
They are perfect. By the grace of God, they are perfect. He is in fourth grade now, reading, writing, screaming, jumping, regular boy.
You God.
Yes, and my oldest one is now in sixth grade. Straight A student, amazing. They are perfect. They're miracles.
They're miracles.
Yeah.
They are miracles. So thanks for sharing your story, Rachel. God bless you and all the best in your journey of really being a great advocate for parents in
No,
this
thank you. Thank you for
niche
having me on.
situation. But this is happening all across the country. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Rachel. Rachel's website is rachelbruno.com. You can check out her information there, her book, and her advocacy for parents. So please go ahead and check that out. And again, share this podcast so other moms or parents that may be dealing with a similar situation can get help and support. And again, for more information on Moms for America, all of our amazing programs, resources to help you on your journey through motherhood, check us out at momsforamerica.us. Join the Cottage Meetings, Healing of America. We've got so many programs available for you. We're just here to support you. We always say this, from public policy to parental rights, from the kitchen table to Congress, Moms for America has it all. And as always, let's keep changing our country. One home at a time, moms. I will see you next week. God bless, and thanks for joining us. A special thank you to our sponsors, the Herzog Foundation and Tuvu. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the Herzog Foundation.